Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com. It is the end of July 2013 as I record this, and it is episode 161 of the podcast. So, today's exciting because, let's face it, it is easy enough these days to produce or publish an ebook and a print book and distribute it through the power of the internet. But I kind of see... You know, obviously that's easy. Self-publishing is easy now. The difficulty is writing a damn good book, going through the editing process and marketing it, basically. But the next frontier in indie publishing, I think, and that started to really get underway, is audio, followed by translation, or foreign rights, which I will come back to in a minute. So in today's show, I'm interviewing Veronica Jaguer, who is a voice talent and my narrator for Pentecost, Prophecy and Exodus, and never know, might be some more. So today I'm interviewing Veronica, but first a little update. So last weekend I was in, during the British heat wave, we have to complain about the weather, it's a national character. But I was up in Harrogate, which is in the middle of England, I guess, to the Thaxton's Crime Festival, and saw some amazing authors speak. Particularly enjoyed Lee Child, interviewed by a British comedian, Sarah Millican. Also love seeing Val McDermid, who is definitely one of my favourite crime writers, and she interviewed her pathology specialist about bones and murdering and identifying murder victims. And it was one of those talks that you enjoy if you're an author for all of the research possibilities. So Val interviewed her, that was fantastic. And also I mentioned Lee Child, Baroness Ruth Rendell, who obviously became a baroness because of her writing, which you can in England, you can become a peer. She's in the House of Lords and everything. And she's still writing at 86. So in fact, she might even be older than 86 now, but really kind of impressive to see her speak and talk about her writing career, because she's won every award in the book. She's written I think 60 novels, and only started writing when she had kids. And so it was that was good to obviously see some really well-known authors, and also some new people in the market, to hang out with some author friends. One of the highlights was probably in the interview with Lee Child. Somebody, Sarah, passed on a question that had come from Twitter. And the question was the old classic, what do I do about writer's block? And Lee says, don't be such a pretentious git. And git is a British word, it's kind of idiot. It kind of means idiot. But it was like, don't be such a pretentious git. This is a job. And then he actually compared it to being a trucker. He said, if you're a trucker, do you get up in the morning and say, oh, I don't feel like getting in my truck and driving all day? You just do it. So he said, that's basically how you write a book, which I thought was hilarious in this room full of, sort of quite upper class women, mostly women, some men, basically saying that, writer's block is pretentious, which I loved. So that was fun. What has struck me, because today I've been reading a post that's just come out of Romance Writers America. Yeah, it's a post on Writer Unboxed, which is a great blog by Barbara O'Neill. So she's been to RWA, which I think is one of the biggest conferences for writers in America. Obviously, romance has always been a forward-thinking genre, got into ebooks early, was where all the first, real breakout books have been online. The quote is, for the first time I can remember ever, editors and agents were wooing authors. You know, one notable workshop featured editors from major houses presenting the things publishers could do for authors. And speakers on the self-publishing track, assembled by self-publishing millionaire Barbara Freethy, packed the room, the ballroom. So basically what it seems to be that Romance Writers America was kind of dominated by self-publishing, and that has become the preference, and publishers and agents are now trying to win back attention. Now, I think that is interesting, and you know, some commentators are calling this a serious power shift. Now, the reason I mention it is because I couldn't have been more different at the Thakston's Crime Festival, and I think that there's a couple of, you know, two things: one, the crime genre, and two, Britain. Britain is definitely several years behind, or perhaps never will be, like America. We do have a snobbery, we do have a power differential issue in our culture. So it was very interesting to me, because last year I went to Thriller Fest and I felt entirely happy at Thriller Fest, very at home, and yet at the Thakston's Crime there's very much a caginess around self-publishing, and certainly no sense of acceptance. So I just wanted to point that out, because I'm very hopeful that if a change has really occurred that significantly in romance in America, that possibly will mean that will take some time to reach other places, but that it may well reach other places. So anyway, I thought that was quite exciting, and very exciting if you're in America. Other updates, I'm finishing my novella, which features Morgan Sierra, so it's technically an arcane thriller, but actually it's turning into more of a political thriller. You know, the religion side is actually political. It's set in Budapest. It's a crime thriller set against the rise of an extreme right-wing nationalist party, which is actually happening right now. The whole book is sparked by the Jobbik party, if you can believe it, who have called for a national register of Jews, and even that register should be made by the secret police, which is just scary. So the premise for the book is, you know, how far a group like that would go to, you know, persecute Jews and Roma, which is the main people that they're interested in. Let's not go into it too much. But essentially, I am finishing that novella, but it's turned into something a lot more serious than I think I expected. So it was called Relic. I'm actually thinking of calling it something less religious in terminology, because it's really a political thriller. We shall see. But that should be out in August. In next month, 2013, it's going to my editor end of next week. Desecration, which is the first in a new series, a crime thriller, is still with a whole load of editors in New York. Weirdly, I've had no rejections yet, which I just want to get some rejections at this stage, after 2 months of waiting, which most likely means nobody has even read it. The pace of traditional publishing is just stunning. So I'm not very good on patience. You probably realise that, but I am going to wait. So I'm starting the sequel, and next month after this novella, and then I'll put them both out at Christmas if it hasn't sold. Of course, I'm, you know, continuing to self-publish. This is not, as somebody emailed me and said, are you just giving up on self-publishing? No, absolutely not. I want to be a hybrid author. I want to try all kinds of publishing adventures. So that's kind of my plan. But I do hate this waiting, and that, you know, talking about a power differential again, I don't like being the one asking as such. So we'll see what happens with that. I have, on the proactive side, which I really enjoy, I have signed a contract with a German translator for Pentecost. We're just going to try out one book for starters, hoping to have it out in German by Christmas in print and ebook. So I'm embarking on a new adventure in investigating the German ebook market, which is currently only 3%, around 3% of sales in Germany. But if we postulate that the UK was about 3%, 3 years ago, and now it's 40%, I think we can tell that, you know, Germany is a mature reading audience with money, best economy in Europe, 80 million people. So if you're interested in, you know, the next market, I really, personally, I think it will be Germany. So anyway, getting in on the ground floor. And I think that's the most important thing for us all to remember, you know, being when I was at the Thakeson's Crime in Harrogate, you know, I looked at Ruth Rendell and just thought, you know what? She was just writing her first books when she was my age. So, you know, we don't need to do everything at once. Let's just say that. And remember that this revolution in publishing is only a few years old. I mean, the internet's only 15 years old or something. And, you know, Amazon, the Kindle, you know, only 3-4 years old. Kobo Writing Life announced their first year anniversary last week, you know, and I've had Mark Lefebvre on the show, and we love Kobo. So, and I couldn't believe it. I was like, seriously, it's only been a year? That's amazing. And if you haven't got onto Kobo, you know, if you're just only on Amazon, I do think it's worth being on Kobo. I don't have many sales on the other platforms, but I've made about £2,500 in the last year of Kobo Writing Life, which is around 4,000 US. I mean, it's still a fraction of Amazon, but still, it's not money to be sneezed at as such. So, yeah, I mean, think about where we're going over the next few years. It's such an exciting time. I mean, it's crazy, crazy exciting. So yeah, calm down. Let's carry on having fun with this, and yeah, let's get on with the interview.
A power kept secret for 2,000 years, a woman who stands to lose everything. India. When a nun is burned alive on the sacred ghats of Varanasi and the stone she carried is stolen, an international hunt is triggered for the relics of the early church. Forged in the fire and blood of martyrs, the Pentecost stones have been handed down through generations of keepers who kept their power and location secret. Until now. The keepers are being murdered, the stones stolen by those who would use them for evil in a world transformed by religious fundamentalism. Oxford University psychologist Morgan Sierra is forced into the search when her sister and niece are held hostage. She is helped by Jake Timber from the Mysterious Arcane, a British government agency specializing in paranormal and religious experience. Morgan must risk her own life to save her family, but will she ultimately be betrayed? From ancient Christian sites in Spain, Italy, and Israel to the far reaches of Iran and Tunisia, Morgan and Jake must track down the stones through the myths of the early church in a race against time before a new Pentecost is summoned, this time powered by the fires of evil. Pentecost, an arcane thriller, available now on Audible.com as well as in print and ebook editions on Amazon and all online bookstores. Find out more at jfpen.com.
Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm here with Veronica Jaguer. Hi Veronica!
Hi, how are you doing?
I am good. I'm so thrilled to be talking to Veronica today, as she has recently narrated my books, which I'm very excited about. But Veronica is an award-winning voice artist, as well as an author of science fiction and fantasy, and she narrates professional audiobooks, as well as podcast stories, and, you know, as I said, some of my books, but a massive backlist, so very excited about that. So, Veronica, why don't you start by telling us a bit more about you and your writing and publishing background?
Wow, well, I started writing for fun. I still write for fun. I think it's important to write for fun.
Yeah.
I have been writing, I guess, professionally since about 2008 or 9. I've been narrating professionally since about 2007. I started because I was bored. it's my hobby. It started as a hobby. Now it's a paying hobby, which is awesome. I play a lot of video games. I used to play a lot of video games. Time management says I can't play them as often now. I started playing an online RPG called City of Heroes, and I met some wonderful people there who are now my co-authors on Secret World Chronicle series. And in a lot of these games, you role play back and forth. Well, we would write down our stories and evolve our characters. And for anyone who's ever played these games, we'd have about 5 minutes of fighting and 25 minutes of sitting down and dialoguing out characters. So clearly there was a story there. The initial core group of people were writing down these stories. And at the time, I had had my second child. Mm-hmm. And they were starting to put out stories in a podcast form. They had another few narrators. They weren't putting the stories out as fast as I wanted. Because as anyone who's ever had an infant at 3 a.m. and you're trying to feed them, you need to stay awake. And so I'd listen to superhero fiction to stay awake. Mm. I was listening to the same 5 or 6 stories over and over. And I emailed my friends and I said, guys, we need more stories. I'm going to fall asleep. They said, well, why don't you narrate them? I was like, why don't I narrate them? And they sent me a story and I read it for them on a microphone that is not as nice as the one I have now, in a room that is not even close to as lovely and buffered as the one I am in now. And they said, great, here's another story. And I got another and another and another. And after 2 years, they took me on as a co-author. And since then, the Superworld Chronicle has been my main consistent voiceover and writing gig. So really, it started because I played video games and I volunteered to help out friends. So it was all for the love of the game.
Which I really like. And I know quite a few authors who are into gaming. And you know how many people go on and on about how gaming is ruining the youth of today and all that stuff?
No. Even from the academic standpoint, there are so many critical thinking skills and even time management skills, resource management skills. If you look at gaming, it's a question of tying it into what you're doing. So if you can find that tie and that interest, there's no distraction.
No, Much. Exactly. And yeah, anyone who's, there's a TED talk, isn't there, by a lady about, what's her name? Do you remember her name?
I don't. No, I'm behind on my TED talks.
I'm going to have to find that because I was so convinced because I'm not a gamer, but I know so many authors and I'm like, you know, I almost wish I'd played games and I could like join in.
It's not too late.
Anyway, so back to the voice acting. So basically you fell into it because of that. But so were you, apart from those stories, I mean, have you always liked audio? Have you always been into, you know, kind of audio books, that type of thing?
I have. I did theater in high school. I did forensics and speech team as well, and I would compete in categories where no one had to look at me. I was terribly self-conscious, very overweight, and I never fit, at least the face didn't fit the voice. So I would always look for ways I could use my voice and pretend to be other people. When I went to college, I did theater there. And I was always typecast. I was always the loud old lady. Which at 19 is really not cool, but you get used to it. And I would listen to, I always loved radio plays. I loved listening to Stan Freberg. And he has it's a 2-disc set, The History of the United States of America, which is ridiculous and hysterical. And knowing that they only had 4 or 5 people to create this brilliant cast just blew my mind. And when I would compete in speech competitions, I would compete in areas where I had to use my voice. I had to storytell. It helped. I had three younger sisters, 1 younger brother who liked hearing stories. Mm. And you learn to play with your voice. So it's just something I've always done and always had fun doing.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned playing with your voice there, and I find it amazing listening to you, you know, narrating my stories, because of course, when you write the books, and you actually emailed me and said, you know, you didn't make it easy on this one, you know, when I'm bringing yet another Eastern European dialect.
That's not the worst. I've had, with Secret World Chronicle, my co-authors figure out how to trip me up. They're like, well, we're going to throw in some Hungarian in here, and then some German, a little bit of Russian, and how's your Romanian these days? I don't know.
It's amazing. And it's just, how do you make up all those voices? I mean, of course, because you're a woman, and yet when you're reading my books, you manage to make your voice deeper, even though you still sound like a woman, but you have this amazing range to me that makes all, and you remember what the characters sound like, which is just like a miracle. So how do you do that?
Well, the biggest thing is I listen. I've learned not to be shy about asking people where they're from, because knowing where someone's from, you can't just walk up to someone and say, you sound like you have a British accent. That's like saying, you have an American accent.
Yeah.
Okay. What part, what area, what city, what neighborhood? Because language is rich and varied. So I listen, I ask people, I watch people speak, because a lot of it for me is figuring out where the sound comes from in your mouth and knowing how to hold your jaw, hold your tongue, how to pull certain sounds back. I watch a lot of cartoons, and I try to listen to the range that different voice actors have and emulate that. It's remembering. I do with some characters, like, for example, with Morgan and Jake and Marietti, especially Martin and Marietti, I have I take little snippets of sound files, and when I start recording a book in a series, I make sure I have 10, 15 seconds of what I've had them sound like, and so I can listen again. So I know that one's going to be lower than the other. I think with Martin, I slur a lot of the syllables together, whereas I try to be a little crisper with Marietti and a little gruffer. I tell you, I lucked out with Jake, because one of my former students was actually from Zimbabwe, yeah, as he would say. And I remember looking at him, so this tall 6'2" golfer.
Oh, sounds good.
And, amazing, amazing. He was on full scholarship and everything. And he was in one of my classes, and I said, "Where are you from?" And he told me, like, "I have never heard that accent before. I'm going to remember that." And lo and behold,
there we go.
It came in handy.
Wow.
So it's listening.
Yeah, well, that's, it's just amazing you say it, because I don't think most people have any conscious control, like, or understanding of where a noise comes from in their throat. So I'm just amazed at how you can do that. But that's so if people were even thinking of, because I actually made a decision, because Podio books, which some people might not know, is when most authors seem to read it themselves, and it's free, and the quality, it obviously has to be good, but it's not professional. But to sell something, you have to be professional. And I thought about, I could read this myself, and now I've heard you read it, I'm just like, there's no way I could have done it myself. But if people want to do this themselves with their books, what would your tips be?
Well, the first tip is your sound going in. That's the best you're going to get. People can spend lots of money on equipment. People can spend lots of money to soundproof a room. But if what's going in isn't clean and crisp, then you're going to spend way too much time in post-production. Mm-hmm. It's not something that a lot of authors will invest in. To get even a passable pro setup, you're looking at an investment of anywhere from $400 to $600. And that's considering that you're going to use, your desktop or laptop that you already have. I know a lot of people, I'm a PC user. That's because that's what my lovely and attractive sysadmin at home can support. So we're restricted there. I know that with, on the Mac side of things, it's a little less expensive, because Apple is, of course, that's your multimedia, that really is your creative side. There are a couple ways you can do it, but the main thing, it's cost and time. For every hour of finished audio, you need to think about putting 3 to 4 hours worth of work into it. Because you're going to record it, you're going to clean it up, you're going to listen to it again, and then any corrections you're going to make, and then you're going to master it and put it out. So it's often a time thing. Not a lot of authors, they want to get to writing the next book. And after, think about it, after you've looked at your first draft, your second draft, your third draft, you send it to your editor, it comes back, you make the corrections, you format it, you put it out there, and now you're going to read it again and listen to yourself read it back. It's like, I don't want to look at this anymore. You want to give it to someone else.
Yeah.
So it's a time thing. It's an equipment investment thing. And like you said, with professional audiobook versus audiobooks, there are some tech differences. It's often, they pay attention to file specs a lot at Podiobooks, and there is some Q&A, but it's gotten so big and so popular, and that's wonderful. Mm. I know the three guys who started it, Evo Terra, T. Morris, Chris Miller, they're amazing gentlemen. I love talking with them. But it's gotten so big, and they're ridiculously busy themselves, so stuff kind of... the bar is not necessarily set as high as it is over at Audible, but it comes out when you look at your audience. The audience that subscribes through there is going to know, and a podcast or a audiobook that's well done is going to get a lot of hits, and it's going to be recognized versus one that's not as well done.
And I mean, that was the other thing that put me off, because, of course, I do a podcast. I don't do much production on this, but, of course, I always have to listen to things again and edit it and things. So I know how long it takes. But when I actually looked at the technical specs for Audible, I was just like, whoa, you know, this is much, much bigger. So for anyone who doesn't know, can you explain, you know, what Audible is and ACX as well?
Sure. Audible is the audio arm of Amazon. So if you buy a book on Amazon and you're thinking, gosh, I want this in an audiobook, you're probably going to find it through Audible. It's not just a one-time marketplace. You can subscribe. And so if you consume a lot of audiobooks, if you travel, if you run, if you are lucky enough to have a job where you can sit and listen for hours at a time, it's a wonderful investment. What ACX is, that is the... It's called the Audiobook Creation Exchange, and what it's designed to do is get smaller publishers and indie authors together with narrators, either up-and-coming or professional narrators, or even small studios to produce audiobooks. And you can do it one of two ways. You can do either what's called a royalty share, which there's no money up front, but the whoever owns the rights for the print and the narrator split the list price, each gets 25% up to the first 5,000 titles. The other paid up front is the author and narrator agree on a per finished hour rate, which you can estimate through word count. ACX gives you an estimate on that. And then that's anywhere from $50 an hour to a professional rate is $200 an hour. 200 to 400. That's about where it lies so that you can maintain any kind of union status that you might have. Mm. Screen Actors Guild, AFTRA, that sort of thing.
Mm. Yeah, so that, so basically people will be paying about 5,000 US, really.
About, yeah, that's a good estimate. Most, if you're looking at a 60,000, 65,000 word book, such as yours, you're looking at between 9 and 10 hours worth of work. So it's going to come between, you know, 2,500 and 5,000 at that top range. Mm. If you think about you're going to put in 4 hours worth of work into each 1 hour finished audio, it really does come down to anywhere from $23 to $30 an hour, which isn't that much. A lot of times people are put off because they think, well, you're just reading a book. Well, yeah. Yes, but you're also producing it and you're taking out the mistakes and you're uploading it. And for the amount of time, that's comparable to, you know, a mid-grade level programmer. It's actually less than a mid-grade level programmer. A lot of your more tech jobs, your engineering jobs, there's a level of, you know, skill there. And you wouldn't think twice about, you know, that kind of hourly rate in that kind of field. But a lot of times you have to work to convince people, no, really, it is worth that much money per finished hour if you consider that that 200 is actually for 4 to 5 hours
everything
worth.
Yeah, and, you don't have to convince me. I think it's totally, I mean, although, you know, we're doing a royalty share, which I think's brilliant, and I love that too. I mean, for you personally, as a professional, you know, do you prefer one or the other, or, you know, do you choose?
Well, with series, I prefer royalty shares because it lets me do a couple of things. One, I have no problem asking an author to listen in Q&A because that takes some of the time away from me and I can focus on recording. And it really helps play into the idea of shared marketing and that long tail that comes through. With ACX, I get paid on a monthly basis, which is fantastic. Yeah. I love getting my check in the mail. And I can see which books hit and which are very popular, which have kind of, you know, trickled off. With series, I'd rather do royalty share. If there are certain authors that I work with a lot, one author, Justin McCumber, I've narrated two books so far for him. And he wrote the sequel to one of the YA titles he wrote. The one I've narrated for him is called A Minor Magic. And he's recently finished A Broken Magic. And he's like, you're going to narrate that for me? Well, yes. And we'll do it royalty share because, like you, they have their own podcast, the Dead Robot Society podcast. Yeah. And they promote and market their work through there. So when someone has that level of marketing and that range, I have no problem doing royalty share because it is going to pay off in the end.
Short stories
are one-offs.
Yeah. I mean, and I, you know, also a professional, I appreciate that you want to do that because it's also a risk. I mean, we're both, you know, there's a risk going in that nobody's going to buy it. And so one of my questions is going to be, and I'll come back to how you choose, but, you know, obviously we've only, Pentecost has really been out a month on Audible, you know, it's a month or two, you know, a Prophecy hasn't hit yet, but is on its way. And we're doing Exodus right now. And so I'm like, but I, you know, apart from telling people that the book's there and putting out the promo and stuff, you know, how do you know what books are going to take off on Audible? Or have you got any tips for people like myself with audiobooks to how to promote to that audience?
Well, part of it is finding other authors who help promote. Some of it is, like, I promote my work. I've used my site at Voices by Veronica to have kind of a weekly or bi-weekly blog where I feature stuff that I've done. So if there's something that was out a year ago, well, it'll get a little bump again when I say, hey, this is this week's featured piece. A lot of it really is word of mouth. When I look at authors more than the work. I think that's 50-50. If someone's going to contact me and ask me about a book, it's great. If the book can be brilliantly written, but if the author is going to leave it alone and not do anything else with it, it's not something I can work with. It sounds silly, but little things in the script, I'll try to get a sample. I've been burned before on some titles where the book has not been well written and the people that I worked with were not very professional. And I made the mistake of doing a royalty share and it has sold one book.
Oh no.
But it's fabulous for horror stories. So I can say I've had that experience and I won't do it again. And I can point to other titles that have done really well. And it's knowing what people like to listen to. For example, with Prophecy and with Pentecost, you have a strong female protagonist and a lot of action. And it's, I remember you describing it as, what is it? Dan Brown meets Tomb Raider, which I thought was brilliant. And I was like, yes, I want to narrate that. That would be so cool. So it's that sort of packaging and that wittiness in the packaging. It's like, yep, I want to do that. It'll be good. Fun. And it helps be enthusiastic.
Yeah. And okay. So if people are going to pitch you, then they really have to think about, you know, their whole package as an author. Are there any types of books you like particularly? We know when you're choosing.
Oh gosh. I tell people I narrate almost anything. I've read science fiction, I've read fantasy, I've read, well, high fantasy, urban fantasy, romance. A lot of people get very, oh my gosh, you're going to read something and it has naughty bits in it. You know, the first handful of stories that I read were for an erotica podcast. I tell people that, the the gentleman I read for, Nabilis Reed, he hosts an erotica podcast, and he found me because he listened to Secret World Chronicles. And he said, well, I'll see if she'll read these or not. And I thought, you know what? If I'm going to be reading romance, if I'm going to be reading adult books, we don't shy away. The door just doesn't close like it does in YA. So you're going to have to learn how to read these. So I have had the blush burned out of my cheeks. And it's hysterical when I get these, you know, lovely, I don't want to say the old ladies, because they're not. I'm getting older. I can't use that. So, but these women, you know, older than my mother, they were like, well, there's a bedroom scene in it. Do you think you can read it? And I'm like, that seems pretty vanilla to me. I think I can do that. So I literally read just about anything. It's how it's packaged, and it's really how the author treats it that make the difference.
Yeah, and what I like about all of this, you know, is it's much more of a business step to do an audiobook. I mean, let's face it, it's easy to self-publish an ebook and a print book these days. It's pretty much easy, and if you don't bother with an editor or a professional cover designer, pretty much anyone can chuck this stuff up. But if you're going into audio, this is one step more professional, really. I mean, for me now, I'm almost looking at books on Amazon and seeing what, you know, who has audio, because it seems to me a step further into being professional, you know, with your books. But just on the market side, how do people, I mean, do you know anything about the size of the audio market? I mean, you obviously see the books selling in Audible that you've narrated, but, you know, do you see that is a big and growing market?
It is growing. I'm not sure how big it is. I can't give you numbers, but I know that, you know, we're on the move. Mm. We have our phones, we have our multi-use devices, and people are constantly plugged in. And those people who want to keep up with their reading, they're going to buy audiobooks. Mass transit is very popular. It's becoming more popular. Local radio is dying. It's terrible to say that. Both of my parents started in journalism and news radio, and I do feel guilty when I switch over to my iPod. I do listen to NPR, which is also great for learning voices. But I still listen to my podcast. I do that at work. So it is growing because of how busy we are, and that's a good thing. But it's also, you have to remember that because we're so busy, we're being very selective about what we want to listen to. And so if you waste someone's time with putting out poor quality or putting out something that may not translate well to audio, you burn someone once, they're not going to come back to you. You often don't get a second chance with audio.
Yeah, and on the other side, if they like it, they want more, which is why we're doing all three.
Yes.
And do you find that with Justin and things, that if people, you know, people do buy one, you know, you do see, once you have more than one audiobook, you do actually start to see some, you know.
Yes. They're actually a very good narrator often. And you see this a lot with voice actors, especially Japanese animation. People follow voice actors. Five or six voice actors will do, you know, 20 titles, and people will start watching titles because of the voice actor. Certain people there are many professional actors who will narrate audiobooks. So if you find a narrator that you like, well, they've read this, you know, fantasy story. Well, they're reading a science fiction story. I don't know if I like science fiction, but I really like how that person reads it. I'm going to go listen to it for the voice. I've had that happen across other genres where people have heard me read, you know, superhero fiction. And they go, well, I don't necessarily like romance, but if she picked it and she likes it and she's reading it, I'll try that. Yeah. So that's encouraging. And I think in terms of marketing, I know that's something I can bring to the table when I work with an author. Because as strange as it sounds, I'm on people's iPods and they want to keep listening.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny. And I mean, just with my podcast, I get emails saying, oh, I love your voice, you know, and it's like,
you have a lovely voice.
Thank you. But you know, well, I don't know, when you started, did you hate your voice? Or, you know, I always hated my voice.
I still hate my voice. It's the scientific explanation is that when we're listening to our own voices, we hear our voices through our bones. So you don't just hear it around, you hear it, you know, through all of through your face. Which means we're going to sound a little different.
Yeah.
I always think that I sound lower than I do. Mm. I'm incredibly self-conscious of a lisp that I have.
Can't hear it.
Because there is a camera and I am checking. But certain things, I don't like listening to my voice all the time, which is great when someone else will listen to it. Mm. It's, we all sound different to one another. That can put a lot of people off from listening to themselves. That can put a lot of people off from recording. But if your only excuse is, man, I hate how my voice sounds, someone else is probably going to enjoy it, and you should at least give it a chance.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, now we know that not everybody can have you read their books. So if people want to find a narrator, how would they do that?
Well, listen to podcasts or audiobooks that you like and figure out how to contact the narrator. ACX and Audible are great because they list the narrator along with the author. And usually you can do a bit of Googling and figure out how to contact that narrator. Mm. A lot of podcasts, there are a ton of narrators out there who do put out either their own work for free via podcast, or they read for other people via podcast. And it's really emailing and asking. Better to hear no than to never have asked.
Yeah, so, definitely.
Emailing, if you know people who do theater or you know people who do radio, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be able to read the book well, but they may know of someone else in their circle who would be willing to work with you.
Mm, absolutely. And the small publisher we're working with, Griffinwood.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, Dave, picked Jeffrey Kafer for the Arcane books. And I was like, yay, because I've had Jeff on the podcast years ago. And I was like, yeah, great. That's, not having really a clue. And then Jeff said, well, a woman should read this, and you were recommended, and I'm thrilled with it, but I never would have even thought that, so does that make a difference? Does the gender of the voice make a difference?
It does. It was actually kind of difficult to start narrating science fiction because a lot of science fiction books and a lot of thrillers are not narrated by women. It's one of those weird things that I learned when I was trying to get work in the beginning. People expected the voice to be for romance and for softer fantasy. And I was like, well, why can't I try to read this? And I think it works because of the range that I have and that personification for the voices. But it's one of those old school things that I think narration is trying to push out of, because it really is a narrator's market. People want to get the books out.
Yeah.
And if you can read and narrate and do justice to the story, it doesn't matter if it's a male or female narrator.
Mm. No, absolutely. No, and I think it's absolutely fantastic. Now, you are also an author and you have lots of different books, but you have a psychological thriller, Fear of
yes.
Thought.
Yeah.
Yes. Tell us a bit about that, and because you are a multi-talented lady.
Well, Fear of Thought, the characters for that actually came out of the same RPG scenario. Mm. But I had those characters, and they would never really fit into the secret world, I guess, multiverse that we have. So I had this character and I loved her, and I was like, I need to write the story. I've always enjoyed far future space science fiction, and I was building this world. I thought, I can put her in there. And at the time, I was in the beginning stages of working on my doctorate in science education with a psychology emphasis, which meant I had to do 21 graduate hours in clinical psychology classes. So a good portion of the story was me studying for finals in a neuropsych class, which is awful. If you ever read it, you'll find the scene. You're like, that reads like a textbook.
Yeah.
But it's a really creepy textbook.
Oh, no, I love neuropsych as well. I did some of that, so it's cool.
Yeah, so it started out, again, started as fun, and I had this character in this world, and I'm actually working on some other pieces in that same far future sci-fi world. So the nice thing about that short story is it let me play with a character that I've always enjoyed and help, and I was able to help her grow in that world, but it also let me set the stage for a multiverse, a setting that I knew I wanted to explore. So I was able to kind of explore it a little bit in the short story, and then for longer novels, I have that backing, and it's published, so I can't walk away from it. I can't weasel out of, you know, some conventions. Like, nope, that sticks. You can't change your mind. Somebody has it on their Kindle or Nook on their, or their phone. It's canon now.
Yeah. And it is out there. It's available on all ebook stores?
I believe it's available at Smashwords, and Smashwords pushes to most of the stores, and it is available over at Amazon.
Yes, it is. I have it. It's in my reading list, and now you've said neuropsych, I'm going to be like going to the top. I love all that stuff. So you're at college, you're doing narration, you're an author, you have a family, you know, you're a mom. How on earth do you balance everything in your life? This is the kind of this number one question that everyone always has.
Well, part of what I teach, I actually teach time management and study strategies, or life management strategies, as I call them. And it's figuring out times for everything, being willing to stop, being able to tell people no. And what I tell my students are usually between 19 and 35, that it's not necessarily a case of not having enough time, because we all have 168 hours in a week. But it's a question of priorities. And what do you hold as really important? What are you willing to set aside? And, you know, if you set a priority, are the little things that you're doing building towards that, you know, top priority? So with me, narration is the top priority. So what actions am I going to take? How am I going to schedule my day? And how am I going to ask for help so that I can work towards that, you know, priority of narration? That's going to drive the amount of sleep I get at night. It's going to drive, you know, what I do, you know, choices I make. I need exercise. To take care of my sinuses. That's often really important, because it's so embarrassing to email someone and go, I have a sinus infection. I can't narrate for another week. I feel so bad. And then with the other balance thing is I've learned to ask for help. I used to be really bad about that. But I ask for help, and I'm very, very lucky to have a spouse who encourages and who recognizes what I want to do and helps us find time for that. I wake up early. I stay up late. It's a balance.
Hard. Yeah.
What else would I do? That's kind of my take on it.
No, it's great.
If I wasn't doing it, I'd be sitting someplace watching entirely too much television.
Yeah, well, and I think your enthusiasm comes across in your performance. You know, let's not call it reading, because it's clearly not reading. It is performance, and it's incredibly impressive. So where can people find you and your books and your audio online?
Oh my. Well, to find my audio, to listen to samples, to get the full up resume of what I've done, you can go to www.voicesbyveronica.com. If you want to kind of get a better update on what's going on, see more about the writing and kind of the blogging, I maintain a blog at www.dawningsky.com. You can find me on Facebook. You're more than welcome to come and like my voice artist page. Just search for Veronica Jaguer. I'm available on LinkedIn. That's often a great way to find me, because I'm listed as a narrator first. Most of my online persona is tied to writing and narration. So if you find me there, you can see the resume, you can get samples. You can search for me on ACX. One of the best ways to do it is if you go to Amazon or Audible, search for one of your books,
search for Pentecost.
And, you know, pick it up.
Come
and
up.
Have it.
Yeah.
And you can click on my name, and it will come up with a list. And you can, it sounds terrible to say, I feel horrible for pointing it out, but if you type in Veronica Jaguer in Google, I will be the first one to come up.
Yay!
Yay! Yay for the weird last name.
Yeah.
And you'll be able to find me on pretty much whatever social network you need.
People can find you, basically.
Yes. Yes, I am awesome. Easily located.
You are. So thank you so much, Veronica, both for being on the show and also for your wonderful work on the Arcane series. And I'm listening to Exodus at the moment. So. Thank you so much, Veronica, and you have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.